We went to Highland Lakes Camp, Camp and Conference Center near Spicewood. It's on Lake Travis, which is currently not much more than the Colorado River Channel. The camp was called Journey. We were in session two, so all week we were Journey Two. The camp speaker was Alan Franz, who is youth pastor at Central Baptist Church in Round Rock. Now, Alan has been a youth pastor for 32 years and at that church for 26. I was amazed at that record. And his teaching was outstanding. He was really good. He was on point. The kids connected with him well. And by the way, there was some music, and it was loud. A fellow named Tyler Murphy and his compadres did the music. The teaching was terrific, both Alan and others who taught. The music was loud. Activities were fun. It was church camp. I want to tell you, what brought me the most joy was watching our students and getting to know them a little better. Their behavior was outstanding. Thank you. It was good. There were no trouble. For the most part, they engaged the activities, the teaching, and everything well. And the movement of some new leaders in our youth group was brilliant and will continue to bring a harvest in the years to come. And like I said, we'll have more of them report later, as many of them are away today. We celebrated salvations and other decisions through the week. Every time a salvation would be announced, the worship center would erupt in celebration. There was a young lady with us who attends the church across the street, Coralie, who gave her life to Christ on Thursday night. That was a big celebration for our group. Three of our own students committed their life to ministry on Thursday evening. And I won't steal their thunder. I'll let them report to you. But it was incredible. And I would say that their commitment is following their gifting, and it was obvious. And I support them in their direction there. We will be giving them opportunities to learn and practice ministry leadership. We're already lining that out. And I would mention Katie Newton, who is often here with us. She told us that she had made a commitment in a previous camp this summer to ministry. And she has already applied to work at Highland Lakes. Hopefully she said, I can get 2 weeks of work in before school starts. She had a big time. She has a big heart to serve people, and she will. The theme of the week and the week's teaching was converge. And when I saw that on the paperwork, I was like, yeah, whatever, converge. But Alan taught from stories in the Gospel of Mark, which illustrated the life-changing experiences of people meeting Jesus. When their lives converged with Jesus' life, they changed. And when we converge with Jesus, we are changed. He did a great job of helping the students to ask questions of the stories, to see the details, to even ask silly questions of the stories, to build curiosity. And then one afternoon we had a speaker in what they called a breakout session who taught how to study the Bible, just plain and simple, how to study the Bible. A lady named Nicole from First Baptist Marble Falls, and she didn't know till the night before she was teaching that. Someone else was lined up for it. They got sick, rang her phone, and she showed up and did a marvelous job. Her 3 points, and you should have heard these before, but in regard to Bible study, observation, interpretation, and application, right? Kids, what were the three questions that go with that? What was the first question? You know. What is it? What does it say? What does it mean? What does it mean to me? Or what do I do about it? Observation, interpretation, and application. And so let's use those 3 points today as we look at the fifth beatitude, Matthew 5, verse 7. And I'll start reading at 3 today. And the beatitudes we've already gone over. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And remember that we define poor in spirit as broken and contrite before God. Just honestly standing before God, understanding our position before Him. Number 4, or verse 4, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. We talked about mourning the loss of people, but also mourning our own sin. Blessed are the meek, the trainable, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled with righteousness. And we talked about that last week and how that hunger builds and it spills over into our human relationships. Verse 7, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And that's our beatitude for today. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Now, the observation and interpretation of this verse is just straightforward. It's not tricky or hidden. There's no hard language bits. But the application might be harder to show mercy. What does this verse say? Blessed are those who practice mercy. Very, very simple. Mercy is their reward. It says, be merciful. Got it? Pretty simple, isn't it? Or you might think of Micah 6:8 in the Old Testament. It says, He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. On the blog, on our website for this message, I've listed several scriptures for you to examine. They help illustrate how important mercy is to God. And those scriptures also help us see how mercy and forgiveness are connected. And I'll let you explore that on your own time. But you can find enough just in this Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, to prove how important mercy and forgiveness are to God. Aren't you glad that God enjoys mercy? Aren't you glad that's part of His character? So what does it mean to be merciful? And by the way, I think the way this verse is written, it's more about character than it is a single act of mercy. Blessed are those who are merciful, who are continuing to be merciful. It's a character trait. What does it mean to practice mercy? I'm going to borrow from some writers here. John Stott had this in his book, but he was actually quoting somebody named Linsky. He says the noun in Greek, eleos, which means mercy, always deals with what we see of pain, misery, and distress, which are the results of sin. Pain, misery, and distress, results of sin. And charis, or grace, always deals with the sin and guilt itself. So the one, mercy, extends relief. Grace extends pardon. One cures, heals, and helps. The other cleanses and reinstates. Mercy, as we practice it, helps cure and heal and help people. William Barclay goes back to the Old Testament meaning, or the Old Testament word that means mercy. He wrote it as hesed, mercy. It means the, and I'd never read this definition of hesed before, but he said it means the ability to get right inside other people until we can see things with their eyes, think things with their minds, and feel things with their feelings. Merciful. And just down the road, our friend Burtis wrote, the merciful see, feel, and think about what another is experiencing. They step to the person's side who is in pain, in sorrow, or need, and walk with them through the difficulty. He said this is deliberate and time-consuming commitment. The merciful are perceptive, empathetic, and willing to sweat right alongside the one in need. Anybody come to your mind as you hear those words? Now, mercy is also linked to forgiveness, isn't it? And we find throughout Scripture these connections. It's not always associated with forgiveness because we have mercy even with those who have not offended us. Mercy is its own character, but it is often linked with forgiveness. And God speaks of forgiveness and mercy in the same terms. He said in the model prayer, you will be forgiven as you forgive. In the way that you forgive, you will be forgiven. This beatitude says, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. As you show mercy, so you will be shown mercy. Jesus lived mercy, did he not? He left his home in heaven to put on human skin, to experience human life. And he experienced everything that we do except participating in sin, but he bore the punishment of our sin. His mercy became grace when he provided for our pardon on the cross. And we could go for a while of examining scriptures that help us understand mercy and link it with forgiveness. And I'm going to let you study some of that on your own. There are Bible commentaries and Bible dictionaries that will help you, your study Bibles, concordances. I mentioned I've listed some cross-references on the website. What does it say? What does it mean? And what do we do about it? The application. How do we apply this? What must we do about mercy? How should the church practice mercy? How do we practice mercy in our families? Is that important? What does this mean to my behavior? We'll start here. Why is mercy important to us? Because it's part of God's character, right? And our purpose is to reflect His character. Our created purpose, as we learn from the first two chapters of the book, are to reflect God's character, to represent Him. God is merciful, and so should we be merciful. I don't know how to say it any plainer. Our created purpose is to represent God. We are to reflect His character just like the moon reflects the sun, the light from the sun. We are to reflect God's character. God is merciful, so should we be merciful. Now, William Barclay, in his commentary, points out three ways that mercy helps us relate to other people. And in other words, direct application here, right now, in this life. First of all, he says, it saves us from being kind in the wrong way. Now, I had to read that again and then read what he said about it. How could you be kind in the wrong way? And he used the story of Martha and Mary to illustrate his point. You remember when Jesus came to visit them near the end of his human life, and Martha was really busy working and cooking, and Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet. And Martha came to him and said, Lord, don't you care that she's left all the chores for me? And he said, Martha, Mary's made the better choice. If Martha wasn't doing wrong things, she was doing good things, but if she had been more in tune with the Lord at that point, she would have known that He just needed their fellowship. He knew life was his life on earth was about done. He just wanted to be with them. He needed their time and their face more than he needed a meal, you see. So he says, when we are merciful, it saves us from being kind in the wrong way. Instead of doing the good, we can do the better, the best. Secondly, mercy makes forgiveness and tolerance so much easier. Isn't that true? When we have an attitude of mercy, we're more prepared to forgive. We're more prepared to tolerate those people who irritate us, or that activity that irritates us, or that loud rock music that irritates us. Thirdly, he says, it's what God did in the person of Jesus. And I've already mentioned this. Jesus put on human skin. He got into our life and experienced it. He put aside all that heaven means to put on human skin, to bring mercy to us. And sometimes we have to put aside who we are or what we are in order to help someone to come into their circumstance, to walk along beside them and help them with their needs. Barclay told a story about Queen Victoria of England and when her husband passed away. And there she was, Queen of England, and her soulmate was gone. And then shortly thereafter, some other important person in their kingdom business passed away and left his wife, and Queen Victoria went to visit her. And when she walked into the lady's room, sort of unannounced, the story goes that the lady was trying to scurry around and to curtsy properly and use all the right protocol because the queen was there. And Queen Victoria said, "Keep your seat. I didn't come here as queen. I came here as a lady who's lost her husband to another lady who's lost her husband. I just want to be with you." That's how mercy works. Sometimes we have to put aside what we think of ourselves or who we are or what we do in order to get to where people need us. Those who practice mercy will receive mercy. That means other people will show you mercy. Probably not every time, but overall it's true. It works. Let me illustrate it this way. How do the people of Lawn respond when Diane Walker needs help or they think she needs help? They will run you over to get to her side because she is the incarnation of mercy to this community. And they respond likewise with mercy. And God shows merciful to those who reflect his character. He shows mercy. Just watch, pay attention, and see how that works. And I was going to tell you another story about something that happened in camp, but Mrs. Ford's going to come tell you come on up here. I wasn't present for this event, and she was, so I'm going to let her tell the story, and then I'll probably comment on it because that seems to be what I do. I think the kids got tired of me commenting on everything that was going on this week. Here you go.
All right, thank you. All right, so the kids got a chance to practice mercy, and it was last full day. It was the last worship service, and our kids wanted to sit on the front row and the second row. I mean, they wanted to be right there. So the doors open, they went in there, got there. They're all sitting there, and all of a sudden, this fairly large man from another church starts screaming at them, yelling at them, telling them, "We have the first three rows, y'all leave, y'all move," and screaming at them. Well, our youth is made up of some different personalities. You had the ones that are like, "What do we do?" You had the ones that were like terrified because this was a fairly large man. and he was screaming. And then you had the ones that are like, we're not moving. I mean, straight up. And apparently we had one that yelled back, we got here first. So I just walked in and witnessed this. I mean, in the whole huge auditorium, he is screaming, not even close to them, from across the aisle, screaming loudly. And I'm like, come on, guys, just move. It's not worth it. Just move. So you have the ones that are kind of hesitant. So we did. We moved to the fourth row and fifth row. They're hot. They are so mad. And they're like, we've been here the whole time. Every time we worship, this is where we've sat. And I'm like, it's okay. It is fine. I said, sometimes God gives us the opportunity to practice fruits of the Spirit, which was part of our Devo, I think that day or the day before. And they were like, you know, but I mean, and some of them, it took a little bit longer to finally just be like, okay, it's fine. I'm like, it's not worth it. It's a chair. We can still hear. We can still worship. So the next worship, the next morning, we had a couple of guys that are like, I don't mind getting yelled at. I'll get there in front of the girls. Because it was the girls that mostly saved the seats. So they got there and they ran to the front and they were there and nobody was there. And I'm like, guys, we're sitting on the fourth row. We're not even going to take it. We're going to leave it open. If that's what they want, that's fine. And they were a little hesitant, but they did. And the funnier part was a different church got there before they did. So when they did, they were like, ugh. But they learned a pretty valuable lesson about forgiveness and mercy after they've been yelled at. And I just told them, sometimes God puts us in situations that are uncomfortable, that hurt, so that we know what it feels like to keep us from doing something like that to others. So it was very a little traumatic for some of us, but it was a good lesson for us.
Thank you, Melissa. We did talk about that in our group time, and those boys that went the last morning, and by golly, we're going to be the first to save those rows. You know, I appreciate it. That's how men are. You know, we want to win, we want to conquer, and we want to protect our women folk, right? And those are good qualities at the right time and in the right amount and the right place. But as Ms. Ford said, it was a day for mercy. And that's not a historic act of mercy, but it was the attitude that caused her to direct our group to be merciful in that instance. And let me just say that group that wanted so badly to sit there, all 72 of them, they were a good group, good people. I had the opportunity to visit with their students and adults throughout the week, really liked them, had a lot of good conversations. And that gentleman who wasn't gentlemanly at the time, he probably thought he was doing the best thing he could for his students, because they wanted to sit up front. You know, they all wanted to be close to those big speakers. I suspect he wasn't feeling really well. I think the weather and the schedule was taking a pretty heavy toll on him, or at least that was what I gathered just from watching him. I'm saying it probably wasn't his proudest moment either. And it was a good lesson to just reflect on how we might treat people that way and when we shouldn't. Going the extra mile. Do you know where that phrase comes from? Going the extra mile? When Jesus was walking around in Israel, it was a rule of law that a Roman soldier could ask someone to carry their pack, and they were legally bound to carry it for up to a mile or whatever measurement they used. And Jesus said to people, if the soldier asks you to carry his pack, carry it 2 miles. Go the extra mile. That's practicing mercy. Intentional and merciful. Miss Ford was not being scared or weak. I promise you she wasn't scared. But she was instructing our group intentionally and mercifully, and I appreciate it. There is a time and place to stand your ground and to fight. We know that there is. When Jesus said, turn the other cheek, he didn't say, never stand your ground. He was saying, most often it's just easier and more merciful and more productive to turn the other cheek, to go the extra mile. He's saying that we will be forgiven in the same way we forgive others. We will experience mercy in the same way that we show mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. So go and reflect the glorious mercy of the Lord. And instead of a poem for you today,